you'll have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight, driving about the great things on the beat. And I don't mind him switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and falling down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fight beside me. Just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They live on milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down the way of life, I'm if you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and falling down the key. If you don't love it, leave it. Singing be warned. You run down my country, man. You walking on right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side. I mean, that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. I might also say that I don't normally announce protests, largely because my audience is worldwide, and you know, in any given area, the protest would there'd only be a limited number of people who'd be listening. But I am going to announce one because I think the cause is a good one. And it's certainly something that could be replicated elsewhere. That is, you don't have to actually attend this one in Toronto for it to be of some value. So this coming Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock, that's March 8th, 2, at Queen's Park. Now that's the legislative buildings in downtown Toronto for the provincial legislature. So in Queen's Park, there's going to be a protest, and it's called the I Stand With Greece rally. And this is a rally against the Turkish government's engineered refugee invasion of Greece. And this is largely organized by a young lady who ran for mayor of the city of Toronto in 2018. That's the same year I ran for mayor in Hamilton. Neither of us won, but she did very well. She's a populist. Very good-looking lady named Faith Goldie. Faith has an exclusive. She was educated at an exclusive high girls' school in Toronto. She has made a bit of a name for herself as a videographer, and some of the work she did that was particularly effective was several summers ago, in 2016 and 2017. She was down at the crossing on the Roxton Road in Toronto, so in the, on the Quebec New York State border, and she was there covering the human invasion. There's hardly any other way to put it. Pouring across the border, very often, suitcases in hand, being assisted by the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. This invasion by third world illegals. We now have had almost 50,000 of them pour across the border. The federal government has predictably done nothing. instead of immediately throwing them out as illegals, they're allowed in. They're allowed to make a refugee claim. Meanwhile, of course, we provide them with shelter, housing, all the predictable stuff, they get the housing, food, Medicare, some English language training if they need it, some job training, legal aid, of course. And they are embarked on a long process of making a refugee claim. Now it's claimed that, of course, about 50% of them will fail because they're not even by our extremely liberal definitions refugees. But don't worry, things are not as bad as they sound. They will in the end, probably most be allowed to stay. And I'll tell you why. Because even if they, it's one of these systems where you can jump tracks. So you fail in one track, but that doesn't mean, that's it, out you go. No, okay, you leap to another track. And you might succeed on that one. In the end, my guess is that they will, most will be allowed to stay. So they'll have scammed their way into the country. We have large numbers of people coming from Nigeria. Now you might ask, and I would ask, and any sensible person would ask, how can you be a refugee, not to be rude about this, but how can you be a refugee from Nigeria? You know, it's now a democratic country. They may claim they're homosexual. In Canada today, that's pretty much in like Flint. They're homosexuals and they face persecution, or they claim they will. Maybe they wouldn't if they just kept their mouths closed. I don't mean about in sex. I mean, anyway, what they do is they fly into the United States on a visa, a tourist visa. They get into the States and promptly, or maybe not promptly, after a few days partying or whatever, head by bus or other conveyances to the Canadian border, at which point they try to cross and that claim they're refugees. Now, you see, that's why they are illegal. Under the Third Safe Country Agreement that we have with the United States, a refugee claimant must make that claim in the first country in which they land. Which means if they come to the United States and if they'd like to make a refugee claim, they must make it there. Not come and skedaddle up to Canada. And vice versa. If they land in Canada and they wish to make a refugee claim, they must make it here. They must not slither down to the United States. This is supposed to prevent refugee shopping. Well, Faith Goldie, this seems like a long explanation, doesn't it? Faith Goldie did an admirable job exposing that. And she even got assaulted for her pains by Antifa protests. But anyway, she ran for mayor of Toronto and got 13% of the vote against an incredibly well-funded incumbent, John Tory. Zionist, anti-free speech John Tory. She was even denied the right to buy television radio advertising by the Bell Media network on CP24. CP24 is an all-news station. So she raised some money. She had the money to, I think it was about $50,000, had $50,000 in her hot little hands, and produced an ad, and that was turned down. She went to court and failed for very complicated reasons that actually were not her fault. Despite the censorship, she did very well. Anyway, she's organizing this rally on Sunday, and it's called the I Stand With Greece Rally, and it's a rally against the Turkish engineered invasion. And a call for the protest says, please support us in saying no to Turkey's weaponization of refugees, no to violations of human rights, no to Turkey's threats in the Aegean. I put this call out with a picture. Masked, of course, mostly Syrian invaders, masked on the border. And Faith says that the last few days, pressure has been exerted on Greece's eastern land and sea borders with a purposeful roundup and transport of thousands of people seeking entry into Greece. This operation is coordinated from the top of the Turkish government by Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan himself. This Turkish operation is a direct violation of Turkey's agreements with the European Union in regards to thwarting human trafficking. And you're asked to bring your flags and meet at the south part of the Queen's Park on Sunday. So that's Queen's Park Sunday rally. If I Stand With Greece, that's 2:00 this Sunday. I'm going to be there, and I hope if you're in the southern Ontario area of the world that you will be too. The strategic Erdogan, the Turkish president, is a strategic thinker. He has wanted to expand Turkey's reach in Europe, he's been turned down, Turkey has been turned down for membership in the European Union. This was a huge argument within the European Union, but nonetheless. And so he said, and this is a couple of years ago, he told the many Turkish women in Europe to have one more child per family. Now, they already have large families. He didn't tell them to have one child. He said one more child, and within 50 years, they wouldn't have to, Turkey would simply overwhelm Europeans who have a very, very low birth rate. In some countries, lower than one, and that would be one child per woman of childbearing age. Replacement is 2.1. After the invasion of 2016-17, with rising populist movements throughout Europe, and popes, the Pope, I'll try to refrain from calling him an idiot, because I think he's smarter than that. He's an evil, crafty man. But anyway, the Pope has denounced the rise of populism as... You didn't have to strain too hard to guess that. Yeah, it's like National Socialism. That's the sort of defamation that you'd expect from an old communist. And he is a follower of Marxist liberation theology. It's the predictable insult. But still, you might have hoped, rightly or wrongly, for something better from the Pope. In desperation, the European Union did a deal with Turkey several years ago. And the deal was this. They would close their borders to these so-called refugees who were simply being given a passageway through. They would come from Syria or other parts of the Middle East, Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran, and other places, Southeast Asia. And Turkey would either put them up in refugee camps and then let them move to the border, or directly move them to the border. So the deal was this. Turkey would no longer ship them on up to Europe, creating a border crisis with primarily with Greece. And in the return, the European Union would give the Turks, 4 billion euros, which would be, give or take, about a little shy of $5 billion. So in other words, you bribe them to secure their own borders. Well, that worked after a fashion. But now Turkey says, well, there are too many refugees here. We're shipping them on up to Europe. But in other words, breaking the agreement. But it's a bit more subtle than that. Yes, there are a lot of refugees in Turkey. They're right beside refugee-producing Iraq, and more particularly Syria. Who are these refugees? Well, overwhelmingly they are, let's think about this, Buddhists? No, they're Muslims. Okay. And Turkey is a, let's say, a Christian. No, it used to be, parts of it used to be Christian. No, it's a Muslim country. Well, these are Muslims. It's their responsibility. It's not the responsibility of at least formerly Christian Europe, now in a spiritual doldrums. Why should not Muslim refugees go to Muslim countries, like the relatively empty Saudi Arabia, or the Gulf States, or Turkey? They're responsibilities. Supposing there were another civil war in the United States, and there were refugees that occurred because of that civil war. Many of those refugees would cross the border to Canada for many good reasons. Canada is in many ways like the United States. We have our founding settler people were European. In fact, in many cases from the same parts of Europe. Primarily England, Germany, and Italy, and Scandinavia, with some slight differences. We are Christian. Now, and I know our Prime Minister would like to say that, but we are overwhelmingly still Christian. So there are many similarities. Oh yeah, we speak the same language, English. Now, if for some bizarre reason, many American refugees decided that they would go to, Mongolia. I have a feeling the Mongolians would say, wait a second, why are you flooding into Mongolia? You ought to go to Canada. They're your people, more or less. Well, that's the same thing here. The refugees, of course, have a goal. They're not primarily interested in getting to Greece. Greece is simply little toehold in the door. What they really want to get to are the more prosperous European lands, particularly Germany and Sweden, where the welfare is really good. But they've got to get into the European Union. That's Greece, and then they will make their way after a while north. Well, Greece is a very poor country, and that they're afraid of even small numbers of them staying. And besides, as the country where they first land, they are Greece's responsibility. So you see what I mean. The strategy has to be to keep them out for any number of good reasons. And this past week, the Greek armed forces have authorized lethal force. And I've endorsed that. Now, I know some people say, oh, that's terrible, shooting unarmed people. Well, no, they're invading. You make it quite clear, here's the border, do not cross it. Now, some of them will try to get across the very narrow straits between the Turkish mainland and the island of Lesbos, like lesbians, but never mind that. It just happens to be closer to the Turkish coast. There are other ways that they can go across the land barrier, and the Greeks are desperate. This is a human invasion, And for those of you who read the book, this is Camp of the Saints. Okay, that's the grim reality. In the past, successful invasions were normally carried out by large military forces. A large force, or let's say a superior fighting force, would overwhelm an inferior fighting force, or a less numerous fighting force. And these people would eventually end up conquering and settling a new territory. That's the way it has been normally through much of human history. But back in the early 1970s, an amazingly prescient French novelist, actually a travel writer and political commentator, who is actually still alive, Jean Raspail, thought of a different way. I don't mean he invented it, he predicted it would happen. And that would be massive movements of people, largely unarmed people, who would simply overwhelm the nation that he envisioned an invasion of derelict boats from India, led by some fanatic religious leader, coming to the southern shore of France in the Mediterranean, and the French regime unable to deal with it. Some, of course, would quite rightly say, sink the boats or drive them away from shore. They are not allowed to be allowed to land. Others would say, but there are fellow human beings, and so you have the compassion warriors racing down to the beach, and in fact, in the end, some of them were murdered. And yet, a French society in turmoil, and ultimately without the will to protect itself. That was his prediction. It didn't have a happy ending. And there's every reason to believe that's essentially true. That he correctly, and very unfortunately, read the mood of Europe, or the degeneracy of much of our leadership. And much of our leadership is terminally degenerate. In fact, the sons and daughters of Richard Count Coudenhove Kalergi, the man who, the ideologue who invented the whole idea of the European Union, they are in place. People like Angela Merkel in Germany, the senior Swedish political leadership, the bureaucrats of the European Union, French President Macron, his predecessor, Hollande, all essentially by the Kalergi dream. And let's be quite clear what the Kalergi dream is. The European Union was not primarily an economic union. It was not primarily an effort to, let's reduce tensions at the borders, let's say, maybe rationalize certain regulations so they apply everywhere and would make the movement of goods and services more orderly and perhaps ensure peace. And if that was all it was, probably not a bad idea. But it had a longer range goal. And in his 1922 book, Praktischer Idealismus, or Practical Idealism, Richard Count Coudenhove Kalergi, who was very well connected in European society, and using a fair deal of infusion of money from Jewish bankers to promote his view, he said that the Europe of the future would have no nationality. So this is where the tingles of fear ought to be rising on your spine. The European vision would have no more French or Italian or Germans or Poles or Danes or Dutchmen or Englishmen, because there would be no more nationalities. And there would be a new European man. Okay, what would he be like? Well, he would be a mixed-race man. Oriental and African. And he would look like the ancient Egyptian, according to Coudenhove Kalergi. Now, his anthropology was a little wonky. The ancient Egyptians who built the pyramids were actually white, but we'll leave that aside. in Kalergi's view, it would be a mixed race person. And there would be a new moral aristocracy of Jews. So to put it crudely, no more nationalities, they would be being abolished. There would be a new European man. In other words, the indigenous Europeans would have been replaced. And the moral aristocracy or leadership would be Jews. Well, how would this new European man come about? Well, in 1922, when Practical Idealism was published, I think Kalergi didn't dare say. But we now know. The new European man will come about because the old European man will be replaced by an immigration invasion from the Third World. That is what has been happening for the last 50 years. That is why people like Angela Merkel would take what any politician would say was an incredibly foolish step in allowing this mass Third World invasion, engineering it, facilitating it. Over 1 million Third Worlders came in less than a year to Germany. Yes, in terms of everyday politics, dumb move. She's essentially, despite her tremendous power, being driven out of office in disgrace. It's taken a long time, but that's what's happening. She's outlived her usefulness in Germany. But it doesn't matter because it promotes the goal. And this is a long way back to what's happening with Erdogan. He is facilitating that for perhaps his own selfish reasons, but that hardly matters as well. You can hardly have turned on the TV or listened to a radio station the last 2 weeks and not heard about the coronavirus and its spread throughout much of the world and the United States. Of course, the original hotbed, terrible, terrible hotbed, is communist China for a whole bunch of reasons. Most of the deaths and the overwhelming, the vast majority of us, of the almost 100,000 reported cases so far, are in communist China. There's a fair serious outbreak, though, in South Korea, in Italy, for reasons that are a little hard to quite fathom, and in Iran. There's also, of course, cases, I think almost up to 50 in Canada, over 300 in the United States, and there have been some deaths. Now, the death rate, to be quite accurate about it, would appear to be about 3%, which is over twice the rate of the common flu. So it's serious. It's not necessarily panic time. In fact, I argue very strong not to panic. It's serious, though. This is a serious problem. 3% death rate is bad. It's not catastrophic proportions where you get it, you die. No, you don't. The most vulnerable are particularly the old. Older people with existing conditions. Weakened immune systems, etc. Okay. In Canada particularly, there is much pussyfooting about just the real source of the danger. In fact, every time the Prime Minister talks about this, it's with a scolding finger that this must not be an excuse for racism and bigotry. No, wait a sec. It's a disease. It's a virus. The main point must be to protect ourselves, and any relevant fact must be taken into consideration. And part of the consideration will be, where is it coming from? Well, it's coming from China, okay? That's racism. Well, no, it's race realism. That's where it's coming from. And so Air Canada no longer flies to China. We've seized all flights to China, quite reasonably. It's not feasible to test plane loads of people. Some countries will no longer, or other countries are no longer accepting visitors from China, or North Korea, or South Korea. Japan ceased that this week. Many other countries have no problem with race realism. The virus hot zone is in and around the city of Wuhan in China. There is all sorts of reasons to believe that we have been lied to. Do you think so? Yeah, I do think so. Chinese government not known for telling the truth. Again, for a whole bunch of reasons. They lie. Here is one scenario. The virus actually came from Saudi Arabia. How, we're not quite sure. It arrived at the Canadian lab in Winnipeg, one that studies viruses. It arrived in 2012 and was being studied, this coronavirus. It was also, I believe, being studied at the medical center at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore. There was a Chinese PhD, medical doctor, and her husband, who were suddenly turfed out of Canada by our security services in June of this year. She was working at this secret medical virus laboratory in Winnipeg, or visiting. Anyway, something happened. She and her husband were thrown out of the country. At about the same time that the Americans were also kind of concerned about her, because she'd been right at the same place at the virus study center, medical center, Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore. Where did she work in China? No, you're wrong on that guess. She was not a waitress at a chop suey joint in Shanghai. No, she worked at a top secret facility in Wuhan that studied viruses. Did she steal the virus? Well, there must have been some reason to throw her out of Canada. And did the virus escape? Well, it seems to have done this. How did it get into the human population? Well, it seems that it is extremely virulent on a racial basis. The most vulnerable are South Chinese and Koreans. A little less vulnerable, but still quite vulnerable, South Koreans and... Most vulnerable are South Chinese and Japanese. Quite close to them in terms of vulnerability, North Chinese and South Koreans. A little bit less vulnerable, Vietnamese. A little bit less vulnerable, East Indians. Less vulnerable, Black Africans. And almost only half as vulnerable are Europeans, with slight differences between the countries. Okay. So it's a racial virus, or at least its characteristic. Is it man-made? Don't know. I doubt that the Chinese authorities want to kill their own people. At least not with something as unpredictable as this virus. How did it get into the human population? Well, the virus is endemic to certain creatures, among them bats and snakes. Chinese eat bats. Yeah, disgusting, isn't it? And snakes, and whole lots of other things. Often these creatures are kept in open air, filthy meat markets, and they're kept live because the Chinese like to eat their especially the wild meat, as fresh as possible. And fresh means alive, not necessarily that the poor animal was happy when it died, but just that it was still kicking or wiggling or flapping or whatever. It is believed that is the circuitous route in which the virus entered
into the human kind. Well, one of the many ways that illnesses are spread in China is through the custom of a communal bowl. In fact, if you've ever been to a Chinese restaurant, I frankly used to go when I was much, much younger. I'm a lot wiser today. I would not go. Now, some people say, well, you're biased. Yeah, damn right I'm biased. I'm biased in favor of kind of keeping healthy. Many, not all, but many Chinese restaurants in Canada are filthy. That their standards of hygiene are just kind of not ours, you know, cultural differences. I could tell you a lot of stories about that. Anyway, the communal dish. If you've ever been to a Chinese restaurant, you've probably seen they will bring out dish after dish after dish, and you usually sit around a round table quite often with other people. And the Chinese meal consists not usually of just one thing. It's not like many Western meals, which would like have a salad or a soup. And a main course, let's say, roast beef and potatoes and cauliflower and carrots and something like that, and a dessert. No, they have many offerings for the main course. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's just a different style of eating. What is a problem, though, is that these offerings or courses are served in a dish. And let's say the sweet and sour pork ribs come out. Well, they're in a big plate on a platter. And people reach in there with their chopsticks and they extract a piece of sweet and sour pork and eat it and put their chopstick back in and haul out another piece. And everybody else at the table, they're they're dipping into the bowl with their chopsticks. Can you see the problem with that? Well, when I was very young, in my early 20s, and going to some of these Chinese banquets in Toronto when we were associated with the Nationals Chinese, the group I was with. And I don't regret that. I do thank my lucky stars I didn't get sick on one or two occasions. But you see the problem with that. And the problem, of course, is there are germs on your chopsticks. And they go. Some of them might go into that slurry or sauce that the sweet and sour pork ribs are in. And somebody else dips in with his or her chopsticks, and the same thing. Some of their germs go in, and so on. And there's quite the possibility that my germs get transferred to somebody else, or vice versa. Now, germs are not necessarily lethal. Our bodies are very, very strong. We have a lot of it. We have strong immune systems, or we wouldn't make it past 3 months. Our atmosphere is filled with germs, and not all of them harmful, but some are. We have a certain immunity to those. Our bodies are able to deal with them and fight them off. But not always, and when the body fails, that's when we have illnesses. So this business of the communal dish is very dangerous, especially at a time of the flu, because the flu is transmitted on droplets of malt water that come from your lungs. If you sneeze or on your saliva, and as those move through the air, or a light on a door handle or something else, the virus can spread, which is one of the reasons for the repeated admonition. And that's one of the best things that you can do to protect your health, to wash your hands. Frequent hand washing will get rid of a fair deal of the viruses and other things that we might pick up. Okay, this is all a way around to an interesting development in Red China, that the health authorities are now very belatedly saying, urging restaurants and others to avoid serving food in a common dish, or if they do, to provide a large spoon, or let's say, dish-specific chopsticks. So, okay, back to our scenario of the sweet and sour pork ribs. Now the Chinese are urging the authorities correctly, when those are served in big dish, to either provide a big spoon or ladle so you take your ladle out what you want for your plate, and your neighbor can use the ladle, etc. But you're not transferring your germs to the ladle or his germs to the ladle, or a dish specific set of chopsticks. So instead of using your own chopsticks to dip into the dish, you use it would be just like the spoon. Eating individual dishes in China, a custom called Fen Kan, can reportedly be traced back to before the Zhao dynasty, which was 1046 to 256 BC. It wasn't until the Song dynasty, that would be 960 to 1279 AD, so you know, a little over 1,000 years ago, the community eating, that's Gongxi, took hold. From outbreaks of the plague to hepatitis and SARS to coronavirus, introducing Fen Kan has repeatedly been brought forward as a potential solution. So the Chinese medical authorities have recognized this cultural problem for a long time. And the idea of maybe going back to the old custom, which is more or less our custom, we serve individual plates, like quite often the cook will say, okay, you want mashed potatoes and carrots and cauliflower with your cut of roast beef. Okay, so your plate is prepared for you, and you don't have to dip onto your neighbor's plate. And so there's been a campaign, actually, for some decades, but it obviously was not emphasized enough. Local governments throughout China are also encouraging the use of serving utensils, including in its largest city, Shanghai. On February 23rd, authorities in that metropolis launched a public awareness campaign promoting the use of gongguai, that's to reduce infections and eliminate germs. And whether that will be a practice that will be picked up, I guess we'll just have to wait and see. But would definitely be a step in the right direction. Well, this is Paul Crum. Going to take my musical break right now. I'm going to play some Scots Irish tunes. These are tunes brought over from Northern Ireland or Ulster by settlers to both Canada and the United States, but particularly to the United States. Many people in the South trace their family line back to Ulster, to Northern Ireland. You'll recognize a lot of these tunes. Thank you.
Hurry back, Paul's Red Hurry Shop. My Aunt Jane, she took me and we gave me tailor her wings.
And you wonder
why I am so proud. You wonder why I sing so loud. Cause my Aunt Jane says to me, no matter where you're going to be, we're people true and proud. Sing with pride and sing out loud. Northern Ireland, Northern Ireland. We're people true and proud, sing with pride and sing aloud. Northern Ireland, Northern Ireland. My Aunt Jane says, lift your tail and sing until your dying day.
And you wonder
why I am so proud,
you wonder why I sing so loud.
Cause my Aunt Jane says, home or away, she's Northern Ireland all the way.
For we're
the people true and proud, sing with pride and sing aloud.
Northern Ireland.
This world you could and astronauts on their way to Mars. Give me an Ulster boy who knows how to walk. Give me an Ulster boy who knows how to talk. Give me an Ulster boy who beats his drum. For at least you know where he comes from. There are men over in Paris, France, who know all about sweet romance. They know how to wine and how to dine, how to make a woman feel oh so fine. The old American boy with his big hat, with his big wallet and his big chat, he knows how to live the real good life. You could be his fine little wife. Give me an Ulster boy who knows how to walk. Give me an Ulster boy who knows how to talk. Give me an Ulster boy who beats his drum. For at least you know where he comes from. There are men in India and Pakistan, men in China and Japan, men in Brazil and Peru. They know what to do, let me tell you. All over this world you could find a man to give you sweet loving as best he can. All over this world you could find a lad to love you through the good and the bad. Give me an Ulster boy who knows how to walk. Give me an Ulster boy who knows how to talk. Give me an Ulster boy who beats his drum. For at least you know where he comes from. At least you know where he comes from. At least you know where he comes from.
And this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me. Back with you again tomorrow, back here on AltRightTV.com. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave, our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot, and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever.